Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
A little bit of background about myself. Been some form of product manager for the last 8.5 years or so, just across the spectrum of product management. So live operations of a business, product development, market research, being the overall business owner, working cross-functionally with various teams like operations, marketing, finance, technology, et cetera, in various business industries. So online ads, mobile console gaming, mobility, as in transportation most recently, and then in a previous life, defense and oil and gas. So I've done a wide range of things and different kinds of business models, right? So advertising, obviously, freemium, right? So if you think about mobile, transactional, and then a little bit of subscriptions, e-commerce as well. So, have seen, again, a variety of ways of delivering and getting value from customers. So that's kind of who I am. So why do product managers make trade-offs? Generally, you have to make a trade-off. You have to give something up to get something else. And that is, and obviously this is like, is this really true? Does this still hold? What if we're constantly delivering value, right? There's always debate about whether this is a truly valid concept, but on a day-to-day basis, there's usually some kind of trade-off for every decision you want to make, right? What are you optimizing for? So a more frequent way that it's seen today, at least from a product perspective, is scope of the product, right? Like what features is it going to have? How quickly can you develop it? And how much money do you want to spend on it? What's your budget? How many resources do you have, right? So generally speaking, those underpin a lot of the decisions, the trade-offs that product managers have to make. And I'm going to use product managers generally, but when you're making these kinds of decisions in any kind of development type business, right? It doesn't have to be software, it doesn't have to be technology. You can generalize this to anything, right? Even to like the various backgrounds that you folks have as well. There is some flavor of this tension that exists in just about every business. So let's talk about some of these, kind of where some of these might apply. What are some of the questions that might arise? So let's start with the first one, speed versus scope. So let's say, budget is constant, right? You know how much money you have to spend, and money can be dollars, it can be people, right? Developers. What are some of the decisions you would need to make, or the criteria that would make you choose one way or the other? Here's some examples that I came up with. And again, it's just my way of classifying them, right? It's, I think some of the stuff that you said follows, I put in on other sides of the triangle, but you could, conceivably or realistically kind of look at them other places. But kind of some of the trade-offs that I imagine would be, for example, fidelity of the product, right? How feature complete does it need to be versus how quickly do you need to get this out the door? Right, so there's that inherent trade-off. If you have a given number of people to work on this or a given amount of money to spend, what are you going to focus on? Do you want it right or do you want it fast? Are you a leader in this? Right? Are you the first one to develop this? Or are you following an established product? Or so are you a fast follower? Right? Because then that will help you make a decision of do you want to prioritize speed versus scope, or quality would be another way of thinking of scope, right? Is this something that's a required feature that you need to have versus an optional nice to have? Right, so then you can determine, is this something that you want to spend the time polishing, or do you want to get it out the door and then you can iterate on it over time, right? So those are some of the kind of questions that would come to my mind when judging based along that axis. What are the kinds of decisions, what are the kind of choices that you would need to make if you're trying to balance between scope and budget, right? So again, these are all about trade-offs, right? So if you're balancing between kind of what do you want it to do and how much money do you have to spend on it, right? Given that you need to get it out in a certain amount of time, right? So is this a prototype? Again, are you testing the idea? Is this a first version, a V1, right? Or is this something that's a finished product that needs to be ready for sale, right? Is this something that you want to make money from or something that you want to learn from? Are people familiar with lean startup in general? Like it's like a cottage industry at this point, but some interesting ideas. It's the scientific method translated into product development, right? But the idea is you have a hypothesis, you create a prototype to test the hypothesis, you run an experiment, you learn, and then you iterate and you develop a new hypothesis, right? So are you learning what you're doing about what you need to do, or you actually mean this to be a product that will earn you money, right? That will determine, again, balancing between, like, do you want to save money or do you want to add more features? And lastly, speed versus budget, right? It's if you assume that you have to deliver the same amount of features, right, you're balancing now between how long can you wait until you're actually earning revenue versus how much is it costing you in development hours to make this product, right? If you think about, right now, let's say, like, you have Scrum, right, is a very popular development methodology, right? So you have engineers working in chunks of, let's say, 2 weeks. So if you have, let's say, 10, five engineers working for 2 weeks costs a certain amount of money, literally in time, is this a product that you want to get out in one sprint, or can it take two? And what does that trade-off look like versus when you need to start making money, right? Competitive pressure, like, what other products are out there? Do you need to get this out fast to match what else exists out there, right, as a fast follow? And if you happen to have deadline-driven development, which exists still at many companies, where it's like, no, the product will ship on this date, right? And so you need to hit it. And then you have to do that trade-off of, are we willing to spend the money, go over budget, so that we can hit that deadline, right? So this is like some examples of the general kinds of trade-offs that often are made. So what makes for kind of like a good versus a bad trade-off? And I actually should have put those in quotation marks, good versus bad. But it's when you're prioritizing for, customer needs, right? What does the customer actually want? What is the value that you're driving versus a business need, right? What does the company need? What are some constraints that you might have? Is this a trade-off that can be reversed, right? Is this a test that you can run versus is this a irreversible commitment that you're making? You can't go back, right? Like, once the change is done, it's done. That, for example, might apply in software versus hardware, right? Where it's a lot harder to make that, to reverse a change made in hardware. Is this a decision that has a long-term impact or a short-term impact, right? Or, like, what is the time frame that you're considering, like, in terms of when you receive that benefit? And these are, again, things that are easy to think about in theory, but hard to do in practice. And lastly, are you addressing the root cause, or are you just addressing the symptoms, right? It's like, if you think about, say, when you're sick, you have a cold, when you take whatever, cough medicine or NyQuil or whatnot, mostly you're just addressing the symptoms because there is no cure for the common cold, right? So you can't attack the root cause, but if you can, what do you prioritize? Fortunately, very few decisions are clear cut. It's very easy to say, we need to plan for the long term. We need to be customer focused. We need to be customer centric. We should always have two-way decisions, right? We should always be able to change path. We should always be able to iterate. It's rarely, if ever, that clear cut, right? And you only know if a trade-off was good or bad with the benefit of hindsight, right? I mean, I used to use a Windows phone. And I'm sure I was one of the 3%, proudly. Proudly, I loved it. And I'm sure that there are a lot of decisions that, in hindsight, ended up being bad trade-offs, versus good trade-offs, right? It's true for every device. The iPhone, they did not launch with an app store, right? They decided after the first one came out that they were going to add the app store. Ended up being a very good decision for them, right? There were trade-offs that they made. And so you only really know with hindsight, right, if it's actually a good or bad decision. But ideally, there's some rules, best practices, things that you can keep in mind when making those decisions so that, you know, you have a better feeling about it. Customer centricity, we talk about what is the role of a product manager. It is to be the voice of the customer. Everything you do should be from the perspective of meeting a customer need, and that's critical. But it is often not sufficient, right? Because it is wonderful in theory and usually in practice, but there are always other constraints. There are always other trade-offs that you need to make, right? Business needs that need to be met, technical debt that needs to be paid off, right? Sales quotas that need to be met, right? And it's the platonic ideal of customer centricity is an important one, but it's hard to meet every single time. And sometimes you need to make a quote-unquote bad trade-off to keep the business going, right? And part of the role of the product manager is making those calls, making those difficult decisions, those trade-offs, because at the end of the day, you want to make sure that you're still there in the long term. And what you need to ultimately land on is having a sense of where you can compromise and where you can't, right? That ultimately is the toughest thing for a product manager to learn is that. And ultimately, the way I've defined is you have to understand what are your non-negotiables, right? What are the things that you cannot, will not, should not compromise on? Because that is so core to what your product is, what your company is, what your vision is, that this thing will not be sacrificed or compromised no matter what. Right? It can't be everything, right? You have to pick your one thing, your two things that cannot be compromised, right? And you have to figure out, like, what are your true non-negotiables, right? What is your North Star? What is the thing that you are going to be holding on to, right? So here are my opinions for some companies that you've heard of. Again, my opinions, some things that, you know, I've heard from people who work there. Think about Amazon. What is their number one priority? Price and selection. For AWS, I would say it's reliability, uptime. Right, the fact that they are always up and available. For Apple, it would be the customer experience. Right, it just works. That polish. Right, it's not a V1. It's always. It's not a V0. It's always a V1. It's always done. For Boeing, safety and efficiency. Right. Ultimately, they make planes that take you from point A to point B safely and efficiently. So I wanted to. So the reason why I tweaked the what I was going to talk about this was because I wanted to use a little bit more of a topical example. I have no insider knowledge, right? This is purely based on just what I've read, just through news reports, public statements, a little bit of my own theories. I try to keep that to a minimum because I don't want to put myself in their heads too much in terms of why they made the decisions that they made. But one could say, ultimately, what happened is the end result of a series of decisions, trade-offs that were made for any number of reasons that are perfectly understandable for anyone who was there at the time. Right? It's one of those there, but for the grace of God go I. Right? So again, it's a tragedy. Right? What happened? Like over 380 lives lost. Like, so I in no way am trying to say, like, I know what should have happened, what shouldn't have happened, but just to spur that conversation, right, about how trade-offs are hard. So a little bit of background on the 737. Probably everyone in this room at some point or other has flown on one, right? It has been their best-selling airplane, originally developed in the 60s. And it was, like, a narrow-body plane, first popularized with Southwest Airlines, and is the plane model that they use exclusively for all of their flying, and has since become popular worldwide for domestic and regional travel. Kind of over the years, airlines wanted to get more and more fuel-efficient planes because the jet fuel is their biggest cost that they have any kind of control over, right? And so the push always to the two main suppliers, that's Boeing and Airbus, is make the planes more fuel efficient. Airbus did that, right? The competitor for the 737 was the A320. They were able to add more fuel efficient engines, bigger engines, more fuel efficient ones to the existing A320, which put it ahead of the 737 at the time. And so Boeing had to decide, how is it going to respond? This was a critical threat to Boeing, effectively their cash cow for many years. And they make these like down in Renton, right? And so they had to figure out, like, what do we do? How do we respond to this? Let's kind of figure out what are our options. They could either make a new plane, they could redesign it effectively from not just from scratch, but it would be a new design, or they could do one last adjustment, if you will, modification to the existing platform, the existing body of the plane, to accommodate the new engines that would allow them to get the improved fuel efficiency. Right? So let's talk about this. What are some of the trade-offs that you think they might have had to consider when doing this? And again, I wasn't there, I don't know, but I can imagine. I mean, I've read reporting. Some of you might have at least heard about this, or at least more in depth beyond kind of the fact that the planes crashed. But what do you think are some of the trade-offs that they had to think about? Who are their customers? What do you think the airlines would have wanted? What are all their pilots used to flying? 737s. They've been flying 737s for 40 years. And every time they made a modification to that fuselage, to that plane, it was a modification, but it was still effectively the same plane. No retraining needed, or very light, you know, just update the manual, right? No recertification, right, from the FAA or any other body, right? If they went with a new plane type, that is potentially millions of dollars of additional simulations and trainings that every pilot has to go through, recertifications, as was mentioned, right? This additional work and cost that the customers have to take on board. Plus, it'll take years, right? And let's keep the timing in context. This was in 2011, is apparently when this decision was being made, which is when the 787 was still in development. And it was already sucking up a lot of money for Boeing and was not guaranteed to be a success. It is now the 787 from a unit economics perspective generating money per plane, but they're still in the hole overall for tens of billions of dollars still. Right, so they're still paying that off. But the plane hadn't come out yet. So now they have to make a decision while they're still developing the 787 with all the complexities that had. Do they want to start up a brand new design for this plane that is their existing workhorse, their existing cash cow, that all of their customers use and rely on and are locked into? So if they take that out, now those customers are unlocked, right? So that is a trade-off that ultimately they have to make, right? Again, putting myself in their shoes a little bit, right? Like, is this what possibly would think? Because these are all smart people, right, who are making rational choices and rational decisions, right? So we know what they decided. Right, they went with the 737 MAX, which was the modification. Right? Over 5,000 planes were ordered. It became their best-selling plane worldwide. Right? Now, there were some trade-offs necessary from the design. Like, kind of as you mentioned, and this is based just on what I've read, and you might know even more. Because of the design of the 737, it was relatively low to the ground, and so it was hard for them to put these newer engines because they were bigger. And so the only way they could fit them, and I'm grossly oversimplifying, is to push them forward a little bit higher on the body of the plane. That had the effect of causing the plane to occasionally tilt up more as it was flying, which in extreme cases could cause the plane to stall and crash. So to overcome that, Boeing developed a new software system called the MCAS. I can look up what that stands for, but which would detect, it would have sensors on the plane to detect if it was going too high and then automatically bring it back down without the pilots having to intervene. Right? Like the moment it would detect that it's going too high for no reason or when it shouldn't be, it would bring it back down. Like it was a safety measure. They were solving a hardware, effectively a hardware design trade-off with software, which right? Seemed like a reasonable decision at the time. And then we saw two crashes in a period of 6 months, in Indonesia and then in Ethiopia, right? Under very similar circumstances. And the most recent information is that it was that system that was implicated for the crashes. And what was also discovered was that there were other additional business decisions made that compounded those engineering decisions. Right? So the sensors that were used to detect when that system would activate, it came with one. If you wanted extra, you would have to pay for them. So it was an upgrade, which neither airline purchased for those planes. Why? Again, we can conjecture they trusted Boeing, right? Boeing planes were reliable. There was never any concern from a technical perspective about whether the plane was airworthy. And so they assumed Boeing wouldn't sell us this plane if it was unsafe. Right? So we don't need to pay $80,000 per plane to get this extra sensor on it. That was a business decision. Why? I wasn't there. I don't know. That was a trade-off that was made. So how do we get better at making trade-offs? That was an example of kind of a series of trade-offs that were made. And how do we get better at it? Because this stuff is hard. And honestly, by doing it a lot. These are battle scars that you earn. And you could, because you don't know if a trade-off was good or bad except with hindsight. Right? Like after you've done it, so that you, the trick is to create a feedback loop. How do you know whether the trade-off was a good one? How do you measure? What's your metric for success or failure? Right? What is your success criteria for the trade-off? How do you keep track? If it was a good trade-off, why? Was it did it work because of luck, or because of it was a good decision? Right? How would you know? Is there a way to anticipate how you might measure that? If it didn't work, ideally, the decisions you make are less life critical as the ones that Boeing made, but at least on a day-to-day basis. But if it was a bad trade-off, why was it a bad trade-off? Why did you make that trade-off at the time? What information do you wish you had had that might have led you perhaps to a different choice, right? And again, and that comes with practice, it comes with experience by doing it more and more. One good model that I've used and that I've seen for how to iterate through this kind of decision-making process, this trade-off process, is called the OODA loop. This comes from the Air Force. It's by a Air Force colonel named John Boyd, who's a brilliant kind of strategist. And the way to think about this is observe, orient, decide, act. It was originally developed, and again, I'm gross oversimplification, as a decision-making tool for combat, especially for Air Force pilots in dogfights. The idea is you can go through this loop faster than your enemy so that you can make decisions faster and then disrupt their own decision-making loops. So again, I have the more full one after this, but at a high level, this is my high level interpretation, the first stage is observe, right? Gathering information, what is the situation around you, right? Just understand, just get all that information in, however you might get it. The second stage, which is often considered, especially by me, the most important one, is orient. That is the interpretation. What does the information mean? Some of this comes from your own training. Some of this comes from your own cultural background. Some of it comes from genetics, right? Just things that are unique to you and how you perceive the world. And some of this is based on experience, right? But what does the information mean? Once you've determined what the information means, you have to make a decision, right? What am I going to do now? Generate your hypothesis. What is the next step of action to take? And then the final one is, do it. Actually take that action, run the test, and then based on what you do, you observe the impact, and then you repeat. right? So it's a loop that you're constantly going through. And the idea is to get good enough at this where you're going through it faster and faster and faster every single time, right? Again, and it's something that, like, in hindsight, seems like, oh, yeah, that actually makes sense. But the trick is to do this often enough and deliberately enough that it becomes second nature to you. Right? And here's like a more, this is from Wikipedia, but this is a more detailed diagram of the model. I don't want to go into too much detail kind of about it, but kind of you start with what are the observations of what's going on, what information are you receiving, the environment through other sources, and you feed it into your decision, your orientation process, where based on who you are as a person and what knowledge you have, what experience you have, understand what the information stands for, what the information means, make a decision on what you're going to do, and then you actually do it. And then it's all iterating on itself, all providing feedback to the observation stage, and then over and over again. So the idea is to go through this as quickly as possible. There are ways this could have been potentially, I mean, you know, this might have, I'm assuming some version of this was used at Boeing when they were going through this. But it's possible that they didn't use it at points when it might have been more useful, right? Like, for example, should we charge extra for that extra sensor, right? What is the cost-benefit trade-off? Like, what is the worst thing that could happen? So to summarize, what I want to talk about today, trade-offs are hard. We make them every day at work and in our personal life. And it's something that ultimately product managers are responsible for. Right? They are the one throat to choke, if you will, because they are meant to represent the voice of the customer. And ultimately, they're the ones held responsible. And so the only way to get better at it is through practice and iteration. Right? There is no magic formula. There is no silver bullet. I offered one model, one way to think through it. There are plenty of others. But the idea is to get better at it and to actually measure and keep track. And then understand what are your true non-negotiables. What are the things that you absolutely, positively will not compromise on no matter what? Right? No matter what the cost. Because ultimately, bottom line thinking is not customer centric. Right? Because at that point, you're optimizing for something that is not always for the customer's benefit. And that might work in the short term, and it might work some of the time. But it is a very risky thing to do on a frequent basis or for the long term. That's it.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.